Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and relationship coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live each month on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Tonight's episode, April 24th, 2014, is called Open Communication. In this half-hour show, I'll be discussing some important things to do or not to do to facilitate closer conversations. I'll be drawing a bit from my first book, I'm Talking, Are You Listening?, also from my work with couples, as well as some key pointers I've taken from my recent attendance at an international couples conference, which was absolutely fabulous. My focus tonight will be the use of language as it affects the conversation between two people. One technical issue first. Your toll-free call-in number is 877-497-9046. If you have a question or a comment, just dial 1 on your phone and you'll be in line to join me on the air. And I think what I'll do is take calls as they come in so we can keep a more rolling conversation going. And now to the issues. How do you have more open conversation? What are the things that are necessary to do or not do in order to facilitate conversations that feel closer, more open, and safer? The first thing I would say is to have conversations by agreement, not by ambush. And what I mean by that is just because you may have something on your mind and you feel like you would like to talk, don't just start talking about anything substantive to your partner or whomever you're engaging the conversation with. Ask if it's a good time to talk, if it's anything more than do we need milk or where's the dog or something like that. Ask if it's a good time to talk, and if your partner says, no, I'm tired, it's not a good time to talk, then hopefully they will tell you what is a good time, a better time. If they don't, ask. And then have the conversation by agreement, not by ambush. What I say to couples very often is that it's important to have a buy-in in the conversation. If you don't have a buy-in, you don't have a receptive participant. And no matter how fancy your language skills are, it's going to start off badly. The second thing is to face each other and make eye contact. So I would strongly advise that you put down all devices, that you not have a conversation over somebody's shoulder, and that you not have anything that may be distracting. When you don't have eye contact, you're missing very important visual cues. So I encourage people to maintain eye contact, to look at each other, and you'll pick up on things that may not come through in the words themselves. The other thing is, the first language thing is that when you share a feeling, use an I statement. And we've all heard about I statements. So, for instance, you would say, when you didn't call me, I felt hurt. Not, you're awful about calling. You never call me when you should. The second sentence really elicits more defensiveness. It's accusatory. It's blaming. And it's going to close down the conversation. So be very careful when you're talking about a feeling that you talk about your own feeling rather than just stating what the other person did. And when you want to make reference to what the other person did, use the word when. So when you didn't call, I felt hurt, I felt worried. When you didn't consult me about that matter, I felt hurt. That's very different than, you never consult me, you never ask me what I'm feeling, and that's a bad statement for other reasons also, which I'll talk about a little bit later. But be careful to use I statements when you're expressing feelings. Another thing is to know the distinction between a feeling and a thought. Feeling statements are statements such as the following. I feel hurt. I feel sad. I feel lonely. I feel helpless. Thought statements are interpretations about a situation or explanations that you assign to a situation. So, for instance, a thought statement would be, I feel that you don't care about me. That's not a feeling statement. It's a thought statement. It's an interpretation about the other person's motivation, and you may be very wrong. Anytime you use the word that, I feel that, or I feel you, it's not a feeling statement. It's a thought. So, for instance, you might say, I feel that you take me for granted. That's not, what's the feeling there? That's a thought about the other person's behavior. And it's an interpretation of their motive. I feel you disrespect me. You're saying I feel, but I feel you. So be careful about the word you and the word that. And you might say instead, when you don't talk to me, I feel lonely or I feel unloved. That's very different than saying, I feel you don't love me, okay? People tend to resist statements that assign interpretations or meanings to their behavior, so be really careful. I've been listening since I went to this conference, and I've been really amazed at the number of statements that happen in the course of any given conversation between couples, because I'm sitting with couples all day, and I've also noticed how I feel that, I feel you, statements, the other partner tends to bristle and often says, no, that's not true, I don't feel that way, I don't feel that way, you're deciding for me where I'm coming from. So it tends to just make people bristle and close down. And I think if you take one thing from this little short, this is a half-hour show, that would be a big thing for you to take with you. At this point, I'm wondering, I have a few different people on the line. Are there any questions? Would anybody like to share something or have a question? Just dial 1 on your phone, and I'll be happy to bring you on the air. No? Okay. We have a very shy audience tonight. If you do have a question at any point, dial 1, and you'll be in line to be on the air. Another pointer is to use the word I when expressing wants or needs, not the word we. And I know that I am very guilty of using the word we. So, for instance, a good example of the use of the word I would be, I would like to do some yard work this weekend, or I would like to go to the movies on Saturday, not we need to do yard work this weekend, or we should go to the movies on Saturday. There's two things wrong with the latter statements. It's a we statement, which comes off as a directive in conversation. It's not an open statement expressing vulnerability about one's wishes. It's a directive, and it feels to other people like a command. We should. We need to. The other thing about we statements is that they presume that one's own agenda is the truth for the other person. And it may not often. Maybe your partner doesn't feel like they need to or should do anything that's in line with what you're saying. When you use an I statement, I would like to do yard work. I would like to go to the beach. I would like to go to the movies. It's open, and you're speaking for yourself directly. It's a more vulnerable place, and it's a more assertive place, and it's more revealing to whomever you're in a conversation with. We, especially we should or we have to, feels more domineering, it feels more bossy, and it feels more like a directive. One cannot speak for the other, and a we should is speaking for the other. So I've noticed this in my own, I often will say, we really should do the bills, or we really should finish that sidewalk, or we really should do the mulch this weekend. And it feels to me as I'm saying it like I'm being suggestive, but it may not be what my husband thinks we should do. The other problem with the should is that who says you should? Where's that coming from? Is there some edict that's coming down from the sky that says, this is the weekend to do raking, this is the weekend to do yard work? It's what we in the field call a cognitive distortion. It doesn't have a reference point to it. So that's another thing. If you, in conversation, if you focus on the word I, and if you notice yourself saying we should, we have to, we ought to, we need to, turn it around. It's really okay for you to stop the action and use an I statement. I would like to. I want to. Or even I need. I need to do this weekend. Okay. Now, another thing is to express wants and needs in a positive way, not what you don't want. I see this all the time in my work with couples. It's very empowering to say what you do want, unlike negative statements, which contribute to a more depressive and stuck culture between the two of you. Negative statements are also very often symptomatic of a very stuck, depressed partner. I'm not saying necessarily that's the case, but often it is symptomatic of it. So, for instance, a positive statement would be, I would like us to commit to a healthier lifestyle. I would like us to watch our diet or to exercise together. Instead of, I don't want to become old and feeble together. I don't want to become out of shape. I don't want to become, to feel like a dinosaur. I don't want us to look terrible. I don't want us to age prematurely. Another example would be, I'd like to be able to talk to you, to each other, more openly. Not, I don't want any more of your defensive bull. I'm sick of it. I don't want you to turn away when I talk to you. I don't want you to be defensive when I talk to you. So framing requests in a positive way requires the requester, again, to be more vulnerable and open. The word want also shows ownership. I want. This is what I would like. And I think if you pay attention to your conversation, you're going to see how often, maybe not all of you, hopefully not all of you, but I think you're going to be very surprised at how often people frame their desires in a negative way. I generally ask people in a first meeting with individuals or couples about what their goals would be. What is it that you would like to see happen? And I cannot tell you how often people say, well, I certainly don't want what we've been going through. I don't want this same old runaround. I don't want this. I don't want that. And I always say to them, what do you want? Can you talk about that in a positive way? What would it look like if you got what you wanted? All right, now we have one caller here who looks like they have a question. Hello, caller. Hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me, Susan?
Yes, I can. Hi. Welcome to my show.
Hi. Thank you very much. I'm just very curious because obviously communication in a relationship is so key, and it seems like it's major issue for so many couples and so many people who are in any kind of relationship. And I think you had mentioned early on that you had been to some kind of international conference for couples and community. Uh-huh. Regarding issues on communication, and I'm wondering if it was brought up at all or if anyone has noticed that there is some kind of more of a breakdown in communication in the last few years between people, because we're living in an age where someone can easily just get on a computer, it can send an email, it's all social media, and it just strikes me that people have forgotten how to communicate, and you lose so much in communication when it's the written word as versus face-to-face. So I'm just curious from a statistic point of view if anyone's noticed or if there's any kind of survey that's been done that communication is really broken down and is not what it used to be because of because of technology.
You're raising a very good question. Nothing was mentioned in the conference about that, but I'm sure there are studies about that. I'm not aware of who's done them. What I do notice in my work with couples is that the technological age has brought about more disconnection in terms of eye contact. They're not talking to each other directly. We're also in a soundbite world where through text it's more efficient to substitute words and to abbreviate things, and so the technological age has forced us and encouraged us to be very brief, and it's without visual context. So I know of a lot of people who've gotten into problems texting each other back and forth, and then they don't have visual cues, they don't hear tone of voice, and they're working in these little sound bites. So it really reduces the conversation to what people think are the essentials, and I think a lot gets lost in translation. So you're raising a very good point, and it's one of the reasons why I encourage people in any conversation to put away your phone, put away your iPad, and look at each other. And using some of these strategies, I statements, saying what you want in a positive way, et cetera, I think you'll have much more open, closer conversations.
That's interesting. So in essence, what you're saying is you've noticed that in your own private practice with your couples that they've complained about this. And that's basically what I'm referring to. How it really can have a very negative impact on the way we communicate. And that's
absolutely. There's also nonverbal communication that goes along with that. I've seen a number of couples, we will just have had a very heartfelt session that's kind of raw, where a lot of important things were discussed and people opened up feelings. And then one person, before they've even left the room, gets on their phone. And they break connection. They get on their phone, and they're already talking on the phone before they're out of the room. And I think that's rude. I think it's rude. It's disrespectful to the process. It's a nonverbal communication to the partner that says, I'm not even going to stay with this conversation long enough to get out of the room. I'm going to switch gears and enter a different conversation or a different context before I've even left the room. That's how important this conversation was to me. I'm not even going to reflect upon it. So that's another problem that I see.
All right. Very interesting. Thank you, Susan. Very, very interesting.
You're welcome. You're raising a very good point. One thing I would strongly recommend that people do, we've all seen, probably most of us have seen people in restaurants where everybody at a four-person table is on their cell phone and they're not talking to each other. So try to have one conversation at a time. It's very disrespectful to the person you're with. And this, by the way, I know is probably a 50-plus person bias. I know 20-somethings would say, well, we can do it, and we can multitask. We don't think it's rude. It's socially acceptable in our world. But if you really watch body language, you'll see people feeling not so great about it, people feeling kind of discounted. But thank you for your comment. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you very much.
Okay, now I have another question here. Hello, caller. You still on the line? Wait, I can't hear you. One second. Let me try another number. Hello, caller?
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you now. Hi.
I kind of disagree with both of you. Hello?
Yes.
I kind of disagree
with
both of you.
Yeah,
I can hear
you.
Yeah, I disagree
with both
of you. Yeah,
in what way?
I did a study involved in one of my businesses, and in that study, it was discovered by one of the largest greeting card companies that the fact that more and more people were actually writing personal notes to one another as a result of the internet, in which they maintain more friendships than people had prior to the existence of the internet. So that people texting and emailing one another in a very, very busy world has actually helped them maintain a number of friendships, some of which become more personal friendships. And I think we missed that aspect of what may seem like an impersonal existence for especially younger people. I think that was very astute of you to say maybe this is an over 50 evaluation of the whole situation. But the other question I had is in relation to the...
Before you go on to your second comment, I'd like to respond to that.
Sure.
I think you're right about how younger people and through the use of the internet and social media may maintain contact with many more people. We've all heard of people who have 3,000 friends on Facebook. They may maintain some level of contact, but what I'm addressing tonight is the issue of closer conversations. I don't know, and it would be interesting to see a study, I have not observed in my own experience that these conversations are a whole lot closer. And what I'm talking about, I'm sure there are email exchanges that get very close. We've all heard of email, you know, people having affairs and the pseudo-intimacy that happens through online contacts. But what I'm talking about tonight is hopefully a face-to-face conversation and the kind of language and attitudes that you use that foster more openness, not the issue of maintaining contact with a lot of people. Yes, I think you're right about that. I know my son has maintained contact with tons of friends from college and high school, and that was not the case for our generation, anybody 50 and older. So I think you're making a good point about that, but conversation is a different thing.
Right.
You had another comment?
As a result of the maintenance of that contact through the internet and through texting, has your son developed some close relationships in which there are more significant and, you know, conversations?
He may have, but I'm not sure that the way that he and his friends use the social media itself fosters closer conversation. So the contact may leave open the doors to face-to-face, in-person conversations. And I'm talking right now primarily about in-person conversations. I'm sure it opens the door to that, but I don't know that texting and the way people text fosters a whole lot. I see all kinds of horrible things happen as a result of miscommunications with text. And you know, it's so that we don't get into a whole thing about the usefulness of social media. What I would like to focus on is, you know, the actual use of language. And I'm sure there are people who, through social media, can be more open. Yes, you know, so I'm sure you have a point about that. But I also see a lot of problems as a result of it. Texts that don't have context. There's no tone, there's no eye contact, you can't hear a lot of things, and in our talk tonight is really about the actual, how you frame what you say. Do you know what I'm saying?
Let's do it. For instance, that was my second question, actually. If I say, we'll say to my wife, I would like to do yard work this weekend, and she says, all right, I'm going to go to a movie. Have fun. What is the other side of that story? What is the answer to, I would like to do this, I would like to do that, I would enjoy doing this? And in terms of communication and love and respect, what kind of answer
would
you recommend?
Ideally, when you state, I would like to do this, you would also say, what would you like to do? So that you're not stating it as a kind of edict for both of you. And your partner may then say, well, I would like to go to a movie. And then you have it's a different issue. How can you negotiate some kind of middle ground, or is it okay to each do your own thing? But you're raising a good point. Close conversation isn't about going around just saying what you want and what you need and thinking that's the whole conversation. But I'm just talking about when you are saying what you want or what you need, to say it in a positive way and to use an I statement rather than we should. Okay?
That makes sense. I think the whole concept of middle ground is a very good idea.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, but that's a great point. This close conversation doesn't happen by just spouting off everything that you want and thinking, oh, now we're close. You're being clear about what you want, and that can help. It helps alert the other person to where you're coming from. But that's another thing that I talk about in my book, curiosity. What would you like? This is what I would like. What would you like? So very, very good point. Now, I'm going to have to move on, unfortunately. It's these short shows that go like lightning. Does that feel like it answers your question?
Yes, that was great.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you for your comments and your question. I just want to get to one other point about closer conversation that we'll have time for now, and that is to avoid the use of the words always and never. It's hyperbole, it's exaggeration, it's again what we call a cognitive distortion, and it contributes to a sense of futility. You always do that. You never talk to me. You never give me any affection. Never want to do what I want to do. It's generally not the case, and what it signals to the partner is something very extreme, and most often the partner feels very misrepresented by a statement like that. It's gross exaggeration. What I recommend that people do is that they substitute the use of always and never with the words frequently or rarely. So you might instead say, I feel that you frequently ignore me, or I rarely feel that I get your attention. Instead of I never get your attention, you never pay attention to me. It's generally more of a it's more accurate, and you will get a less defensive response. Now, I have one more question. My earlier caller looks like they have another question, so maybe I'll be able to extend the show just a few minutes. Hello, caller? Hello? Did you have another question? Nope. Okay, looks like there was a question mark that came up. No. In any event, these are just a few pointers. There are lots of other things that can foster closer communication or more closed defensive communication. And I just want to thank my listeners tuning in and to my callers for your questions and your comments. I really appreciate that. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you'd like more information about which leads to more connection and resolution, get a copy of my workbook, I'm Talking, Are You Listening? Fix Communication Problems with Your Partner in No Time Flat. It's available as a paperback and as an ebook on Amazon. And you just could go to Amazon.com and just key in Susan Lager and you'll find that book. For any further work on language which either obstructs or opens things up, you can also feel free to call me at my office in Portsmouth, New Hampshire at 603-431-7131, and I'll be happy to do a brief piece of work with you around if you'd like some coaching. I have the skills to do that, so I'm really open to working with you individually in a live setting if you'd like to address this. In any event, my next episode is Wednesday, May 22nd, 2013, at 8:30 p.m. And hopefully by then we will be having some kind of a spring. It's trying now. But in any event, good night, and I hope you all enjoy the show. Bye-bye.